Sam. Good evening, everyone. My name is Barrett Starling, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 29th, 2004. My home group is the Monday Men's Group, meets in Bethesda, Maryland. And we meet on Monday nights in Bethesda. We good fellowship beforehand, right across the street from my shopping center. If you're ever in the area, feel free to reach out, get you connected. I am there more Mondays than I'm not. And I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor. I tried to give him a call, left him a message on the way here. I think he's traveling, getting ready to travel for work. And yeah, I'm grateful to be here. Billy, thanks a lot for asking me to come out. And wow. I try not to, and think too hard about what it is that I have to say when I get up here, other than my experience. I've been taught that, just saying a prayer of just being honest is a, never hurts. And I don't have to think too hard about it because the topic is me and, my story and, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And so I'll jump right into that. Boy, oh boy, feel a little frazzled, but we'll get going here once I grease the wheels. It's been a full day since I've opened my eyes. I got to, so I'll start with this. So I was I'm from New Jersey, born there, two-parent household. Just to kind of give a little backstory, I've got an older brother. Parents split up when I was 8 years old, and probably had a little something to do with drinking and alcoholism, And I've got, that was all pretty fine and mostly normal, right? And so I lived with my mother for the next 5 years. And then kind of flipped to living with my father for the next 5 years, almost 6 years after that. And I guess give that as like a little bit of background on who and what I am, not necessarily relevant to me being an alcoholic. I do think there is some connection there, right? Like I look at the history of my family, especially the men. Most of us didn't fare very well when it comes to our relationship with alcohol and even some substances and whatnot. But I will keep it to my experience with alcoholism. I am an alcoholic. I identify with what the book talks about as being an alcoholic in both the doctor's opinion and in some of the chapters following thereafter. And, I saw a lot of destruction and chaos surrounding what drinking did to people, what it did for people. Kind of now in hindsight, I can kind of understand why people would return to it. If you lived in the chaos and calamity that was in the households that was a good chunk of both sides of my family, really. And so I don't know if there's any connection to that in me being alcoholic, right? Like you hear people stand up at these podiums that have all sorts of backgrounds, and I think that's a beautiful thing about alcoholism is that it doesn't single any particular person or background out as to what makes it. And I do have time here to kind of go into some things, but I think I'll, just kind of fast track it to where things started for me. And for me, it started shortly thereafter I left living with my mother and moved in with my father. That was a little bit of a interesting situation, to say the least, because it was a move that wasn't really expected to be a move, but it was a necessary one due to what was going on in the household. And that looked like, not knowing what we were going to slay at night, not knowing if I was going to make it to school, mother who is full-blown alcoholic and doing the best she could, like truly. And I don't harbor anything from that. And my father just wanted to kind of get me out of that situation. And he was just another version of alcoholism, himself. Just a little bit more functioning to keep things together, but definitely kept things close by, right? I always was a little bit envious when I hear people talk about their family having liquor cabinets and things like that. Like nothing lasted long enough for there to be a cabinet in my household. There was a bottle here and there. There was always some cold beer, and that was about it. Like anything else was getting drank, right? Like nobody left things behind. And so I moved in with him, not knowing that that move was happening, the summer of me going into eighth grade. And that was a bit of a shock for me because I left from where I'm from in Jersey and moved to Connecticut. My parents were both in the gaming industry and worked in casinos, and they had just opened some casinos in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut. And so my father decided to move back east after living in Las Vegas for a few years. I actually have had more trips to Las Vegas as a child than I have as an adult. He wanted to be closer and be more involved and do what he could for me. And so I lived with him and moved on in, and he was working this job and, doing the best he could. And we had all the things that we needed, just him and I. For me, it was just like, man, like everything that I had known, all the family that I had had, but like we didn't really have hardly anybody where we had gone to. And, plenty of kids have had that. The town that we moved into, it was like the couple of main industries was like either people moved there for that casino or kids were bouncing around. There were military kids because there was also a Navy base there. And so fast forward into, me starting to try these kind of, trying drinking and getting into that. It didn't take very long. It did not, I was not a, didn't t I'm not a victim of peer pressure, in my story. Really, it was curiosity. I had been around all these things for a number of years, kind of known what was going on a little bit, and an opportunity came, and there was a desire for me to try it. And so I went for it. And, somewhere later in that eighth grade year, I made a couple of buddies. I played sports. I had always played sports up to that point. And the one sport that I think my parents could kind of keep up with, because it was fairly low cost, at least at that time, there wasn't a big circuit of like traveling and all of that stuff, at least for somebody like at my skill set, was baseball. So I played baseball and made some friends playing baseball. And a couple of these kids did some other things, after practice some days. Eventually, drinking became an opportunity to drink happen, and I took it. And I don't have like crystal clear picture of like what that was like. I don't remember the condensation on the bottle and the paper and the wet. No, I don't remember all of that. Some people have that level of memory. I don't. What I can tell you is that I know that it made me feel pretty darn good, and I enjoyed it and did not get like hammered drunk or anything like that that first time, but definitely got a sense of relief that I didn't know that I was looking for. So, somewhat off to the races I went, and I hesitate there because there was, I would pretty much try most things that made me feel good, so I want to kind of be mindful of like how I speak to that. But there were a number of things that I was kind of getting involved into, more so than just drinking at that time, because I was I think 13, 14, and so like opportunity for things were pretty limited. But I would take opportunities to drink anytime that I could get them. And even though I didn't have a liquor cabinet at my house, my friends' parents did have liquor in their cabinets and around their house, or had like some display or whatever. And for whatever reason, pretty early on, within that, that time, me taking that first drink, for effect, I should say, because I, sips here and there as a young kid, but that didn't count. Drinking for effect to see what would happen if I actually did this, to 6 months later, it was nothing for me to like be at my friend's house and be in the kitchen by myself. And they're like, oh, go grab something. And I stumble across some booze and think it was a good idea to just try it, right? And brown, clear, whatever it was, I was willing to try it, and enjoyed a lot of it. And so going kind of like through life in that way, it made me feel like I fit in a little bit better, right? Like a lot, it felt like, and I knew this isn't the facts, but what it felt like is that everyone else had known each other for a long time, had these relationships and all this stuff, and I was the outsider trying to get in. And really, people were pretty, I wasn't too shy of a kid. I was opened up enough to make some friendships and things like that. But whatever it was, something about that booze, it just made it feel a lot easier to kind of grease those wheels and made me feel more socially acceptable. And I got into some other activities that, were not necessarily legal to make some money. And again, like all this stuff just kind of like, it wasn't like anybody was showing me how to do this or telling me I needed to try to do this. It just felt like the next right thing to do for whatever reason, you know. I watched a lot of film and TV and all this stuff, that I saw these things that looked pretty cool, and maybe that had some influence. I don't know, you know, but it just kind of carried on from there to where you know, legal trouble started pretty early for me. And within, you know, from that first drink for effect to about 18 months later, legal trouble started. And legal trouble did not stop until, you know, into my sobriety, really. And what happened was is that I had to pee in a cup for somebody. I had to go to an outpatient program for somebody. The county that I lived in only had three or four of those type of programs, and I had touched all of them. And by the time I was 17, I was in inpatient treatment, and I was the youngest by far. Like I was, you know, I think the guy closest in age to me was twice my age. He was like mid 30s, which felt like ancient to me at that time. And I'm just like, you know, I'm here because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like what I'm doing is really not a big deal. Like if people just left me alone, like I'm not doing anything that's harming anybody. Was the attitude that I had, and I really believe that. Like you could have hooked me up to a lie detector test, I'd have been like, you know, if people just left me alone, it wouldn't really be much trouble. Like I'm not out here causing a lot of harm. I just want to have a good time. But the problem was is that I wanted to have a good time all the time. And pretty quickly, my drinking looked like up to that point, getting into that treatment center, was that it was the weekends, and then weekends bled into, okay, we'll do Thursday through Sunday, right? And then Thursday through Sunday became, you know, almost every day pretty quickly, to every day. Like I had to ingest something to feel okay with myself and to feel okay with you, right? On my way down here, I was telling a couple guys, like I was listening to a Don M speaker tape, and he was just talking about that inferiority complex and the ego and just never feeling, you know, equal with the peers, right? And I had no language for that at the time, but like I was always measuring up with how I felt to those other people, and often feeling less than, and then occasionally I'd feel better than, right? But I could never feel equal to. And there was nothing that anyone was doing to me to make me feel that way. That's just how I'm hardwired. And so did that outpatient or inpatient treatment, and they took me to, you know, they loaded up the bus and they took us to AA meetings, and I couldn't tell you a word that was said in those meetings. You know, I'm sure they were all well-meaning. I don't remember anything being too chaotic in any of those meetings. I do remember always keeping a focus on where the clock was in the meeting because I just like was just so I just wanted to get out of there. It just felt like another chore, another task. And all that to say, like, I just wasn't ready. I was not ready for any solution that was being offered. I wasn't interested in even remotely believing that I had some sort of problem related to what was going on in my life. I thought, again, I was just a victim of circumstance, where I live, the color of my skin, the, you know, the police picking on me versus instead of picking on these other guys. And, you know, and I had some instances that I felt like maybe somewhat justified. At the end of the day, I was doing things that I had no business doing. I got in trouble, and that's where I ended up. And so I do that outpatient program, and it was like just as I had turned 17. And you know, still had a whole nother year of high school left, and I loved going to school. Like, you know, some drunks like to talk about how, well, you know, that was not for me, and I would leave. And because I was essentially, you know, my brother's almost 11 years older than me, like that was where I wanted to be, because that's where everyone else was at that was doing the things that I was doing. So I did just enough school that they wouldn't get rid of me, but that I could keep coming every day and do what I need to do. And I would not often stay the full day. I was, you know, dancing around the schedule and having people write notes and doing all these different things so I could kind of get out of there early. It was really a meeting place for me so that I can go out and do the things that I wanted to do. And so by that point, I was probably pretty much full-blown alcoholic, and but had no idea and really wasn't interested in solution. And plenty of solutions were being offered to me, right? Like I had principals, counselors, probation officer, a lot of well-meaning people trying to help me to do the right thing or get on the right track. Like, And I just, you know, I would say whatever I needed to say in the moment to get out of the trouble that I was in at that time, or for you to back up a little bit to give me enough space. But I just wanted that space so I can go back and do what I wanted to do. And that got me in instances where I had been robbed a couple times. I remember being robbed at my father's house, you know, by at gunpoint, and with some people that I considered friends, right, that had kind of set up this situation. And for me, that was just like the cost that had to be paid in order to keep doing what I was doing. And I didn't think much of it. So post-treatment, I go back to high school. I'm in that last year, and I get in trouble in a way that's a little bit more consequential than some of the other times. Police pull me out of the car, dog in the car, multiple cars, this whole scene on a Saturday morning at your like local grocery store. So everybody's there, and in this small town, and so small that my friend's mom saw what was happening and made the phone call to my dad to tell him what was going on. And I had a knack for getting in trouble consistently, but like even at like not the best times. Like this particular time, my dad was having a minor, somewhat minor surgery that required a little bit of recovery. And you know, it took me until a couple of years sober to realize that he couldn't trust that I was going to show up for him enough that he had to have his, you know, mother take a bus down from upstate New York to come help take care of him for a few days, because I was very unreliable. And so she had just gotten in town the day before. My father just had this surgery where he wasn't really supposed to be moving a whole lot, and they have to come and see me, you know, in this police car. Grandmother's crying, you know, car's getting all ripped apart, all this stuff going on. And you know, when the book talks about incomprehensible demoralization, I've got several other moments that have happened, but that's one that sticks out to me, because I remember seeing the tears coming down my grandmother's face as I'm getting arrested, and she's just like, why? You know, like she had no idea how bad things were for me, you know. And I think my dad tried to, you know, probably partial embarrassment, maybe partial to try to protect me. They had no idea what he was dealing with me, because that wasn't, you know, the first time I'd had a, you know, blown out situation like that. And so that didn't look too good. And by Monday morning, I had gotten out of jail and was getting myself ready to get to go to school that day. And school called and said, hey, we know what happened. Don't come in today, right? The things that you're doing, we can't have that kind of people here at the school. And so they sat me down for a little bit, and I was close enough to graduating that they weren't going to force me totally out, but they basically said, no more day school for you. You can come at night for a few months and get the few credits that you need, and we'll get you your diploma. And so we went ahead, and oh, there's my sponsor calling me back. Talk to him a little bit later, but so they did that for me. And you know, I kind of laid low, but I didn't stop doing what I was doing. I just kind of started doing more and more things by myself, right? Like just total loneliness, and feeling sorry for myself, not really knowing what to do or where to turn, and just really not interested in what was being offered to me, right? Like, 'cause at that point, I had already been to, you know, probably a half dozen AA meetings, had been to the outpatient, had been into treatment, all this different stuff, and was just kind of at this place in my life where I was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do next. And so fast forward, they give me an opportunity to walk for graduation and to go to my senior prom. They were like, you know, it seems like you're kind of holding things together, which I was, at least outwardly, because I just kind of made my circle very small, because I was just so paranoid and just sick of living the way that I was, or getting into the trouble that I was getting into. I wasn't sick of doing the things that I was doing, because I was still doing them. But they let me go to that prom, and within 30 minutes of being there, I got caught with a handle of vodka in the parking lot. And I was running late, because I was running late to everything in my life at that point. But one of the chaperones, which was a gym teacher, also was running late and saw me in the parking lot with the bottle turned up, and was like, "Hey, I saw that. Like, I'm going to go tell them what's going on." And I was like, "You didn't see anything," and whole thing. And they were like, "You should leave." And so that turned into me getting my diploma sent to me in the mail, and a lot of family pretty disappointed, right? And even though, you know, some of them kind of had an idea what was going on, they just didn't know how bad it was. But when they were told that, like, hey, you can come and we'll all celebrate and Bear graduates high school and maybe he'll get ready to go to college, who do all these things. And all that kind of was like not happening. And another just kind of reality check. But again, I just was not willing to admit that, you know, maybe that there was something wrong with how I was living. So I'll fast forward to get to, you know, my I don't want to say introduction to AA, but me being a little bit more open to AA. And what happened was is I worked a little, you know, seasonal job that summer, was trying to figure out what I was going to do, took some time to I don't want to say to reflect, but it was just kind of like, all right, well, maybe I kind of keep things small as I had been doing and just kind of keep it to myself. But I worked with a bunch of guys that were just as bad as I was and maybe a little bit further down the path. And so we were just getting messed up every day on this job after work and all this stuff. And, you know, it was a seafood restaurant. So it closed, you know, basically Memorial Day to Labor Day. Once Labor Day came, I had no other plans. And in that summer, things started to get more and more intense at home. My father was just really tired of how I was living. He just felt like he was giving me all these chances and opportunities. And, you know, when I was newly sober, I would tell people he kicked me out. He didn't want me to live with him, you know, put me on the street. The truth was, is that I wasn't willing to do what he wanted me to do, which was don't do these things in his house and to stay out of trouble. And I just wasn't willing to do it. And so we had a couple of physical altercations. He kicked me out. I'd come back. And then within a couple of days, something would happen again. And, you know, by the end of that summer, I was, you know, kind of living wherever I could rest my head that night. And so whether that be like a cheap little hotel, Howard Johnson or Motel 6, or sleeping in a friend's basement on a couch, that's what I did for the next few months. And kind of in between all of that, an integral part of my story is my mother. And my mother, you know, full-blown alcoholic. And but during that time where I was kind of like declining, her life was changing and she had found new people and had gotten sober and had been sober about 4 years at that point. And I had seen that something had changed in her life, and I knew it had something to do with her, you know, going to these meetings and hanging around with new people. And but I didn't really make the connection that like maybe that could work for me. I was like, well, she's older and there was a lot of things going on and you know, much different than, you know, myself at 18 at that point. But what she did was is that she offered me an opportunity to come and live on her couch. And there was no like set plan for how long or what that looked like. But she was like, you know, you can get on this train because there's a train that runs from Boston to DC pretty much multiple times a day, probably still does. And I had taken that train on spring break and things like that to come see her. And she's like, you can get on that train today. There's a couple trains left. She called me on a Sunday morning in the fall of 2003. And I just was like, well, let me think about it. And she's like, you can either do it today or you don't have to do it. And basically hung up the phone on me. And I sat there. And that night before, I had slept on a friend's couch next to a German Shepherd. And I'm allergic to dogs. And so it was very itchy, uncomfortable night's sleep. And I thought to myself, like, man, like maybe there's something. Maybe I could use a break. I think that's about as far as I could think. There was no thought of like sobriety or what any of that looked like, but just like maybe I could just use a break, reset, and kind of figure out where to go from here. And so I ended up getting on the train that afternoon and pulled into Union Station later that evening. And when I by the time I got here, I kind of sobered up and I was like, man, like, was this a good idea? Because now I'm away from anything and everybody that I knew and really had no access to anything that I wanted. She did make it pretty clear to me though that she didn't want me to bring any of the stuff that I had been doing into her house. And excuse me. And I made, you know, a promise that I could do that. I made plenty of like very empty promises prior to then. But for whatever reason, I respected that enough. And we were living in this little one bedroom apartment and I stayed on her pullout couch. And she had a plan for me. I didn't know about this plan, but her plan was for me to go to this to another outpatient. But this outpatient was much different than any outpatient I had been to because I was living in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut. And, you know, we had like maybe one counselor and a bunch of crazy, you know, adolescents and teenagers that were just, you know, the any message that was there was way outweighed by the mess that we brought in there. And so she had me go to this outpatient facility. And I didn't even know that's what it was at the time because I didn't have the phone that we have now where I could look things up. It was just like, you're going to this place, let's go get you an ID, show that you got some residency, all this stuff. And I go to this outpatient and it was like, whoa, this is much different than anything I knew about. And you had literal people coming off the streets into this place and organization that's still in existence in DC. And it helps people like us, at least to get started. And this place had an outpatient part of it where you would come a couple times a week and they would also give you, access to healthcare. And I had no job and I'm 18 and I, just kind of had some medical stuff that I needed medication for and, asthma and all this stuff and allergies. I'm like, all right, well, I'll do whatever they want me to do. And somewhere in the fog, they had mentioned that, like, you're going to do this for a little while, and then we're going to send you to the mountains of West Virginia for long-term treatment for 18 months. And I was like, whoa, that doesn't sound like something I'm really interested in doing. But I kind of felt stuck. And the best thing that this place told me to do was that, any day that I didn't go there, which I think I had to go there, was like 2 or 3 days a week. Any day I didn't go there, I had to bring a meeting slip with me and get the meeting slip signed showing that I went to other meetings, So it wasn't what like court related, but it was related to me getting treatment there. So I had nothing better going on. And so I started going to these meetings and, I'm tagging along with my mom and she's a few years sober and going to meetings with her and I'm listening to people get up and speak at podiums like I'm doing now. And it was kind of cool because I was like, sounded like people were telling these like books on tape where they had these crazy stories and car races and going to jail and this and that. And now their life is all this, great stuff. And that's at least what I thought I heard. And, I was like, man, again, it just sounded like that was nice for them, but like, it just didn't seem like that was going to be the place that I was going to be for any period of time. And what happened was, is that I just kept going to these meetings, right? Like I'm going to meetings regularly. I'm starting to get to know people a little bit. Everyone there was at least, old enough to be my, my mother or father. And which was fine. I didn't have a problem with that. But, it was like there was just like the meeting. And then after that, I was just like me with my thoughts. And I had a lot of blockbuster sobriety early on, right? Where I would go to the meeting, especially on like a Friday night, where like I just felt like I was just like counting the minutes trying to stay sober. And I would go to Blockbuster and I would go to the Chinese carryout and I would get some movies and some video games and some fried rice and chicken wings. And I'd go home and I'd be like, I'd just be up, and not realizing that I'm probably like kind of detoxing and just not knowing what to do with myself and trying to figure it out. And in the meantime, I'm trying to figure it out. God had a plan for me that I didn't know was already in place. And all I had to do was just keep showing up to the places that I was showing up to. And so I was sitting in a Friday night meeting, which is my mother's home group, still is. And a couple of guys came into that meeting on a Friday night in December and were doing some outreach with flyers and talking about a New Year's event for sober people. And I was like, I don't even know what does that even mean? And I paid very little attention to what they had to say about that. And but these guys kind of beelined it to me right after. They somehow could spot that I was a new guy in the room, right? And lo and behold, like you stay around here long enough, you can kind of spot people that are newer to meetings that you t attend regularly, and that's a good thing, because if you've made it here, chances are maybe it's not by mistake. And if you just kind of come and sit, you really don't fully know what's going on. But thankfully, these guys came over to me and introduced themselves, and I had been to some meetings at that point, and they were just like interested in what I was up to and where I was going to go next, and did I want to come to a meeting with them the next day? And was I interested in playing cards with them that night? And I hadn't hung out with anybody my age for a couple of months at that point. And I'm just kind of sitting on my hands trying to stay sober. At that point, I think I had a few weeks sober because, without any real direction, like I didn't have a sponsor. I just went to meetings, right? Like went to a bunch of meetings, didn't really get into the book. I had a book, but my level of comprehension was, next to nothing at that point. Because I'm just like barely getting by life at that stage. And these guys were really just kind of living what was going on in that book. And I'm so grateful for that, because I if someone was just like, hey, go to these meetings and read this book and you'll figure it out, I don't think I would have made it. I know I wouldn't have made it, right? Because I did that for a period of time on my own with no real guidance, nobody that had been through the steps. and just kind of flopped around and then got tight and booze was available and I drank it, around Thanksgiving. And so these guys found me about a month later, me just sitting on my hands again, and invited me out to come to a meeting and to play cards that night, and then they go to a meeting the next night. And that snowballed. And they took me to a meeting the next night, and then they took me to a meeting the night after that ended up being my home group for about the next, 20 years. And didn't know that at the time, but they, took me to this meeting in DC called Midtown at that time, and met downtown, and I was just like blown away. I hadn't seen anything like that in a couple of months that I've been going to AA. There was people my age, there were people, a few years ahead of me, there were people decades ahead of me, and it was just like the energy was just there. I didn't know what that was, but it just something felt different, and that's nothing wrong with the meetings that I've been going to up to that point, but I think I needed to be able to identify with some people that had recently come from where I had come from, and kind of had that similarity there. And so I was introduced to some young people at AA, and that was, probably one of the biggest blessings that happened to me in my life up to that point, and still probably to now. And I just got kind of in the mix of everything. And again, still was just going to a lot of meetings. I was surrounded by people that were, doing this thing and ahead of me. One of those guys that I had met that had kind of dragged me along to meetings the next couple of nights, and then got me connected with some of his friends to get the meetings nights that he had other things going on. And he had a full life at that point. Like this guy was, he was working full time, he was going to school full time, and he was full time in AA. And he made sure that I was taken care of. And that did a lot for me. The fellowship, I really rode off the fellowship for a little while, but I could only ride on the fellowship but for so long. And from the time that I met those guys until my sobriety date in May, I went back out and tried some drinking again, three more times. And I won't bore you with the details of each one of those, but the last time, and hopefully it stays to be the last, I had driven down to an AA convention down in Orlando to an IKIPA, and I didn't know anything about what that was going to be like. There was, 3,000 young people, and there's all these meetings and chanting and enthusiasm for sobriety and all this stuff. And, I was like, this is a lot going on. And, just by chance, and there was, I kept in contact with some of these old buddies of mine from when I lived up north. And even though people were like, maybe you should give that a break for a while, I'm like, what do you guys know? Like, these guys really know me. And so keeping in touch with these guys, one of these guys lived about an hour away from where this convention was. And I told him, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna be there. It'll be good to see you. And you guys know what happens. I put myself in a position where I'm defenseless, alcohol is an option, and I drink. And it was by no means as bad as some of the other situations that I had up to that point when I would go back to drinking, or even when I was in the throes of alcoholism. But at that point, I had been to, meetings just about every day, and had started to kind of adopt some of the things that you all were talking about. I was helping, set up and break down meetings and things like that because I didn't drive, right? Like, so I was in the car with guys, and those were the guys that had to be at the 8:30 meeting at 6 o'clock to help set it up, and then they'd go to dinner and then come back to the meeting, and then they'd help break it down and then drop off two other people before they drop me off. And so I was along for the ride, almost 7 nights a week. And so alcoholism was like, the solution was starting to penetrate. I had a sponsor, all these things, but like I just didn't quite believe fully that this was where I was going to be for any period of time. But that last time I drank, something in my mind, I don't know, clicked or what, but there was something there where it was just like, I didn't drink because of other people. This was a decision that I made. And I can't say that AA doesn't work because I haven't done all the steps yet. And until I've done those steps, I can't say that this doesn't work. So why don't I give that a try? Again, so many empty promises I've made to myself, to other people, but for whatever reason, I was willing to try this thing. And the people around me made it look attractive because their lives were getting better. People that I had come in with around the time that I came with, their lives started to get better on the inside, on the outside. And I couldn't call what it was that I was seeing in them. I just knew that they came in seemingly pretty broken, quiet, reserved, whatever, angry, That was me. I was very angry, but like kind of quiet, didn't really want to talk to a lot of people. Didn't know that it was just a lot of fear because I was just in a situation that I just didn't understand or know or, really feel like I had anything to offer. But I saw these other people getting better. I saw the people that were ahead of me continuing to do the work. And it was just like, man, like there's got to be something to this. So why don't I just kind of keep going along with what they're doing? And so I got busy with the steps. And, shortly thereafter, my sponsor, he had already had me praying. He already told me, when you give me a call, he gave me kind of a framework of like an inventory, spot check inventory to go over with him. He was telling me all the stuff that was in the literature. And I had the literature. I just didn't, it didn't compute to me that he's like actually doing this thing. And so piece by piece, brick by brick, he's kind of helping me build this life that I didn't even know that I wanted. I didn't even know that I needed, and was literally saving me. And all while this is happening, that father that I talked about, that relationship that I had with him was strained to say the least, right? Like I had, physical altercations, stolen money, stolen peace of mind. As I'm getting into the steps, I'm learning that, this peace of mind thing that I had stolen from people who loved me was a big thing. And I didn't even, so I'm feeling all this stuff that I hadn't felt and really not equipped to handle. But thankfully there were so many people ahead of me that I was around that could kind of guide me on what to do next. And so my dad started to get sick and they didn't really know what was going on with him. But I was told that, you should do all that you can to try to better that relationship. And so, we were playing a little bit of hopscotch with the steps, but it was like, hey, show up for him, call him, see how he's doing, go and visit him, get a job, show up for that job, start contributing, doing all these things. And these were all concepts that like they weren't like foreign to me, but I just hadn't practiced them, right? Like my dad was a pretty good example of like showing up and doing work and doing all these things, right? And I'd had that in my life, but it was just, I guess when you're finally open to it, like you can actually hear what's being said. And I could hear it and I started to do it. And fast forward a little bit, we found out my father ended up, he had cancer, and that cancer began to spread. And over the course of the next 18 months, he got sicker and sicker and, ended up in the hospital and eventually didn't come back. And then in December of 2005, he passed away. And at that point, I had been sober about 18 months. And, the relationship was, repaired as best as it could be up to that point. And actually, he would even say that he was pretty happy with where things were at. Because he didn't have to worry as much, right? Like I would call and check in. I could tell him about the things that were going on in my life, and I could show up for him. And even though I didn't know how to be all too affectionate, and it wasn't something that he was too great at either, we had a good understanding, and I was able to write that relationship as best as I could before he passed away, and even got to sit down with him and talk to him and let him know, like, hey, I'm willing to do whatever it is that you want me to do. And the two things he said was that he wanted me to go to college and get a degree, which I think at that point I was like sticking my toe in community college and not doing a very good job at it, but trying. And he knew I'd been sober about a year and a half. And he had wanted to come to my first celebration, but he just wasn't well enough to make it down. And up to this point, I've been able to kind of to stick to those things, right? Like eventually, it took me 7 years to get a 4-year degree. And cost me a lot of money that I'm still paying, but I was able to do that, and I've been able to stay sober, and it has not been a linear ride along the way. It's been a lot of ups and downs, but I would say, generally speaking, my life is pretty good today, and I'll fill in a lot of the gap or some of the gaps here with what's happened over those years, and that sponsor that I met on that Friday night, who was outreaching for a New Year's Eve play, is the only sponsor that I've ever had, just by chance, And reason being is that this guy has always been busier at AA and helping more people than I have, and is relentless, right? Like he's not perfect. He's going through a lot of things himself, but he's just always stayed involved and connected, right? Like I can tell you where he's going to be on the nights of the meetings that he goes to. And God willing, he'll celebrate 25 years in the next, in what, about 6 days, 5 days. And I've gotten to see a lot through him, and flawed and good, bad, and indifferent, but still here and going the course. And as for me and my sobriety, I would have told you something like my father passing away would have been something that like was a good excuse to drink over. And I tell you, that experience was probably one of the things that made me a more of a believer in the power of AA and the power of a higher power than anything that had happened to me up to that point. And what I mean by that is, like, my dad, he got sick, and he ended up needed to go and live with family back in upstate New York. And during that time he was living up there, I would go up to visit. And members of my home group had some connections to AA up in that same area, right? It was a pretty big home group, and pretty much anywhere you were going in the country, somebody knew somebody or knew somebody knew somebody. And just by chance, somebody knew somebody in this town. And I would go up there, and I would go to this meeting, and it was like an old school clubhouse meeting. They had been there for a long time, still smoking in that meeting at that point, right? And this is like early 2000s. And I loved it. I smoked, and I loved the coffee and just like the people, and they were just hardcore about sobriety and getting people sober. They would let people that were detoxing sleep in the clubhouse, and just kind of a crazy kind of place. I don't know if that was all necessarily the right thing, but it was welcoming to me. And I would go there, and every time I would come up to visit, I would make sure that I went to a meeting. And my family understood that, like, hey, he's going to go to this meeting, and we don't know what that is, but it seems to be working for him. So, he's going to go on and do that. And so I would go to these meetings and talk to these guys about what was going on and why I was there. And they would always check in, and they would call and see when I was coming back up. And, when my father passed, without me even saying anything, I remember going to my dad's wake, and like four or five of these guys from that home group were sitting there. And, I feel like the last few years when I talk about that, it almost makes me tear up. And that spoke to me volumes, because I didn't have people in my life that were willing to do that kind of thing, And even though the age that I was, like, I had, a number of people pass away around me, because the way that I lived, was not it was not for longevity, that's for sure. And the fact that these guys showed up to this wake, I think even a couple of them showed up to the funeral a day or two later, and just checked in, and were just there. And that meant so much to me. And by just, unfortunately, some of those guys, or most of those guys, like, I don't know where they're at. I don't remember some of their names, It's been 20 years now. And but I'll never forget that, And any time I get a chance to show up for people in AA for things like that, when they have loved ones pass away, or our fellows that pass away that just don't quite get this thing, I still try to show up, because it meant so much for me at that time. And that, as dark of a time that was, that made me more of a believer in the power of what was happening here than anything. And I felt more indebted to AA in that, like, where could my life go to, if I stick around here and do these things? If people are showing up like that, like, who knows what can happen for me? And that doesn't mean, like, necessarily materially or anything like that, or any recognition, but just to have that level of, like, awareness and care for others that I knew nothing about, right? Like, people loved me and tried to help me out and do all these things, but those examples of people's actions were very powerful. And so, fast forward, I kind of fumbled my way through and made a lot of mistakes, but I was, in the middle of AA and going to meetings, trying to help people. If I couldn't, I would get down on myself because I'm like, well, people that I'm sponsoring aren't staying sober, but you always hear this, like, well, you stayed sober, right? And that was the case for me, and for a number of years. And I just kind of kept it chugging, and ended up being able to graduate college, and had some of that family that got the reject call of like, hey, you can't come to this high school graduation. They got to come to a college graduation. And I got to show up for people in my life, right? Like my mom has had a number of challenges, personally and family passing away of this illness and things related. And, my mom is one of six and she's the only one left, and not the oldest one, right? We had a span in 2017 where I think she had three siblings and her mother passed away in about 12, 14 month period, right? And I got to show up for that. And I don't want to say these things, these kind of down, rough situations. That's what AA kind of like builds you for, but it does help, right? Like I got to learn how to show up and to be there. And I don't know the right thing to say. There's people that are way better at difficult situations than I am, but I know that 75% of it is just being there for people, right? And you just never know what can happen. And I was fortunate enough to meet my wife in the program. We were cleaning coffee pots on a Monday night meeting for a while. And we're both, in different relationships and just were friends. And, things happen, each relationship ended, and then we start talking. And, next thing you know, we end up in a relationship and, born out of, service. And we still are both active members in AA as best as we can be. I struggle with like what that looks like now because jumping around a little bit, but when we got married in 2018 and then had our first child in 2022, and now we have two kids. I've got a 3-year-old and a 11-month-old. He'll be one at the end of this month. And that really changed things because I had 17, 18 years of like I could just do and be and show up and diner, sure. You live over here, okay, no problem. Like all of this stuff. And so showing up has been a little bit different now in my recovery. But I try to remember that like, people, I got again, I have plenty of people that have done this ahead of me and there's different ways to be involved, but I can still, participate in my recovery and the recovery of other people. I just have to be open to it. And it's gonna be inconvenient and it's gonna be difficult and there's gonna be sacrifice at home, right? And there's gonna be all these different things. But I have to remember that my life wouldn't be the way that it is today if it wasn't for the sacrifices that other people made for me and the sacrifices that I've made all these years over and over again, right? And all the things I could talk, so many road trips and conventions and this and that and all this other stuff that I've done. And that's great of all those things that I've done in the past, right? But I cannot rest on the laurels of what I've done in the past to carry me through today, right? Because today things are not easy, right? Like dealing with a toddler and a baby and just like no reasoning and being challenged all the time and I feel like I'm failing every other day. But I show up in the way that people showed up for me. I show up in the way that I've been taught to show up here in AA and I do the best that I can. And with that, I'm super grateful for the life that I have and hope that I can continue to stay here. And I really feel like at times that it feels like another beginning again, right? Because it has to look different than what it did the 18 years prior. And I feel like I'm still adjusting, right? Like I have the meetings, I still have my home groups, right? Or home group that I show up to and I try to participate there. And I try to answer the phone and pick up the phone. And week to week is very dicey on what that looks like, right? And a lot of times it's out of my control, but I just have to keep open like the dialogue with friends and whether that be in like group chats that I'm in with other sober dads that I know and talking to my sponsor and all these different things where I have to try to get help and be of help because I feel like now you stay sober long enough that that I've got to do a lot more giving than I am receiving and I've got to try to tap into a higher power a little bit more than maybe I was accustomed to for a while. I think I was able to rely on the physical presence of being in front of alcoholics and being at the meeting and all those activities. And now it's like where is my reliance when like those things are not like it would be unwise for me, for my family, for my marriage, all those things to show up in those ways, right? Like something would go. I have to find ways to kind of tap into something greater than myself. So, that felt like that went by pretty quick. I feel like I'm winding down here. I'm also, thank you for this water. I should have drank it 20 minutes ago. But what I'll say and what I'll leave you with is that, Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that's happened to me in my life. And that's because it has allowed me to be open to help and helping others and just like all that is being offered here and a solution to a problem that I wasn't even sure that I really had when I got here, right? Which is alcoholism. And alcoholism is more than just the drink. It is, that mental state of selfishness and self-centeredness, the delusion that I live in, that I can still live in, all of those things. And I need something to combat that. So I need to stay here. I want to be here, because I never know, where my help is going to come from. So thank you all for having me here. Billy, thanks for asking me to come down. And for that, thanks for letting me share.